We're doing the Rambam's introduction to Mishnah, and in the Rambam Lam edition, it's page Mem, in Rav Shilat's edition, it's page Mem Aleph. The Rambam has been discussing the breakdown of the oral law, after the Rambam explained that in Halachah Moshe Sinai there are no arguments, so the Rambam is discussing the different components of the oral law. And the Rambam had said the first component are the explanations of the written law that we have on tradition going back to Moshe that have an allusion in the verse and that we can derive with logic, and that there is no argument about. The second is the component of the laws that our sages specifically told us are Halachah Moshe Sinai, and there's no proof, but we just have them on tradition. There's no allusion in the verse. The third section are the things that are derived with logic, with laws of inference. Not laws of inference, but with svara, with logic. And now we're up to the fourth section, the Achelik Ha'ovi, the fourth component of the oral law. These are the things that the prophets and the sages instituted in each generation in order to fence, form a protection to the Torah. And God commanded the sages to institute these fences, so to speak. And that's what God said in general in last week's parsha. Watch my watching. The Torah is called our watching. The Torah watches over us. And God commanded us to watch over that watching. We have on tradition that what God was telling us is asum ishmer lemishmerti. Make a protective layer, so to speak, over my protection. And our sages call these gzerot. So our sages instituted, for example, don't carry your pen on Shabbos because you might come to write. The Torah doesn't prohibit carrying a pen. That's a gzerah. That's offense. And sometimes the sages have an argument. Because one sage says we should decree this way, and the other sage disagrees with him. And we find this frequently in the Talmud, that our sages say, Rabbi Ploni gazar kach mishum kach v'kach, that Rabbi so-and-so decreed such because of such and such, but Rabbi Ploni lo gazar, another rabbi did not decree such. And this is one of the reasons why we have arguments in the Talmud. Sha'arei b'sar of mechalah v'gzera midrabanan. The consumption of bird flesh together with milk is a rabbinic decree. Really, the Torah only prohibits eating meat, animal meat, with milk. The Torah does not prohibit eating fowl, chicken, or any other bird with milk. The rabbis instituted that just as we cannot eat regular meat, animal meat with milk, we may not also eat bird meat with milk. So this is a gzera, a decree, midrabanan, from the rabbis, kedei lachik min averat, to distance us from sin. And the only thing that the Torah prohibits is the meat of a pure animal. But the rabbis prohibited eating bird meat together with milk, kedei lachik min haisur, to distance us from doing that which is prohibited. And we find that with regard to this decree, there is an opinion in the rabbis that does not prohibit it. Rabbi Yossi from the Galilee, in his town, they used to have cheeseburgers with chicken meat. Because he said, I don't make this decree. He disagreed with the rabbis in his generation. So he ruled in his time that you may eat chicken meat with milk. And when it comes to Xera, you can have a machlokes. Later on, we accepted the other opinion, but in his day, the people of his city, he was their rabbi, they'd eat cheeseburgers with chicken meat. So they'd have chicken with milk. This was famous in the Talmud. And when the rabbis all agree that we should make a certain gzera, a certain decree, and cholkim alav shum panim, then we cannot argue upon it. The rabbis accepted it, that's what they said, and that's what's accepted. And once all of Israel accepted that gzerah, we cannot argue on that. That's our tradition. Today, if someone's going to come in and say, I'll eat bird meat with milk, I go with Rav Yossi Aglili. We say, you can't do that. The Jewish people accepted the other opinion.
But you can eat milk and fish.
Sfaradim have a custom not to, but yeah, and even the prophets cannot annul such an institution. And that's what the rabbi said in the Talmud. that even if Eliyahu the prophet would walk in, he could not annul one of the 18 gzeros that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel instituted. And the reasoning that the rabbis gave is l'fishisuam pashat b'chol Yisrael, because all of Israel have accepted that this is prohibited. So Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel instituted certain things. One of the things is you may not drink wine. If a non-Jew just touches wine, we don't eat non-Jewish bread, right? That's an institution from Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So the 18 things that they instituted, there were 18 things they instituted at a specific period. So those things, even Eliyahu could not annul because all of Israel accepted them. So that's the fourth component of the oral law. And the fifth component, these are the things that the sages really made, so to speak, a social contract, that everyone agrees to these things that are relevant to our behavior with one another. That they're not in addition with regard to the commandments and they're not a detraction. Or certain things that our sages, so to speak, instituted, but they're things that are for the benefit of mankind with regard to the Torah. That's what we call institutions or customs. And you cannot transgress them. And King Solomon already said, if someone wants to transgress these social contracts or these institutions, these takanot, these customs, the verse says in Ecclesiastes, he who tries to breach a fence, so he's breaching the protection, so a snake should bite him. And there are many institutions like this, and they're mentioned throughout the Talmud and the Mishnah. Some of them with regard to things that are prohibited, and some of them with regard to monetary issues. And some of the things the prophets instituted, like the institutions of Moshe, Yeshua, and Ezra. Moshe sages taught us, Moshe instituted that when it comes time for Pesach, the rabbis give speeches teaching us the laws of Pesach. So you're not going to say that's a mitzvah, that's not a gzerah, that's a takana. Moshe instituted that the leaders, when it comes time for a certain holiday, they give speeches reminding us the laws of that holiday. Dambu, and our sages said, Moshe tiken hazan. Moshe instituted the exact words for the first blessing of Birkat HaMazon, of benching, the blessing of Hazan, b'shashiach adam an Yisrael, when the month came down, so the Jews knew they have to bless God and thank Him for the food He just gave them. After they eat, they have to thank Him. The Torah says you have to thank Him. Moshe instituted what the wording of that blessing should be. Yeah. So, the fact that Moshe instituted doesn't mean it hasn't evolved since then. We might have added certain things to it. A good example of that would be the fourth blessing, the blessing of Atova Amitit. When the rabbis first added that fourth blessing of benching, so that fourth blessing was Boch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam Atova Amitit. Period. Two words after Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. Atova Amitit. And as what? Yeah. Today it becomes Hakel Avinu Makeinu Adirenu Goreinu Galeinu Yotzein Kedoshen Kedosh Yaakov Reinu Reizal. A long, long blessing. But the initial institution was what? Atov Amiti, two words. The blessings evolved. I think that that's a separate discussion, but we see that within blessing there was room for evolvement. And this evolvement really lasted a long time. Our sages gave us a rule that from the period of the men in the Great Assembly, we're not allowed to change. But until that period, we see things evolve. That's what the Gemara seems to say. The Gemara contradicts that. The general rule is that we have exceptions to that. We have blessings al tvilas kalim. Doesn't say anywhere. Leisatef batzitzis. Al aminim was okay. So it was instituted. It was forgotten. It was reinstituted. So the second example the Rambam gave us is Moshe's institution of the blessing of Hazan, the first blessing of Taknot Yeshua Israel Rabot. Joshua and Ezra, they instituted many institutions. So we know Yoshua, for example, instituted that for the sake of the inhabitants of the land of Israel, he instituted many institutions that we forgive one another. One of them was if you see someone else's tree growing, and there's a branch at the root of the tree that's growing out, that it won't harm him if you cut that branch off. So you could take that branch in order to plant it in your own field. So obviously you're not allowed to prune it, his tree. But there are certain things that Yoshua instituted so that we'd have an easier time inhabiting the land. Basically, put the Jewish people together and said, okay, now we're all going to agree that we're forgiving one another. That on these monetary issues, we are going to forgo these things for one another so that we will have an easier time inhabiting the land of Israel. So there are 10 such institutions that Yeshua made before the Jews scattered to inhabit the land.
So if the from the gates of the big house, the branches of the vine tree comes on the street.
It's a different question.
Anybody could just come in and take a...
That was in Yeshua's time, and there are details we're not going into. It's just an example. And we find that single rabbis made institutions. We find that Hillel saw that people didn't want to lend one another money because they knew Shemitah's coming and I won't get my loan debt. So Hillel instituted a concept of prozibul. Prozibul is that, let's say, Arthur gives me a loan. So I owe him $100. Now, at the end of this year, the end of Shemitah, I won't owe him the $100. Shemitah annuls the loan. What happens if I owe the money to the courts? I don't owe it to him. So then the halacha says that the courts, Shemitah doesn't annul what you owe the courts. So what a prozibul does is that a person says, look, I have a piece of land. We say that when it comes to land, you can't overvaluate land. Land has the potential for being valued a tremendous amount. Even a small piece of land. But it has the potential for a tremendous amount of value. Maybe you'll find oil down there. Maybe you'll find a jewel there. You could grow things there. Land has endless potential. So we say that what Arthur can do is, he can say, this piece of land, we're going to evaluate it for the value of the loan. And we're going to make it as though that land is his. And now, it's as though I'm going to collect it through the land. What Arthur does is he says, I'm taking this loan and giving it to the courts. Once there's a small piece of land, so we can consider it technically as though the loan was collected. And once he gives it over to the courts, so practically, these are really two aspects of why it can be collected. If you would collect it off the land, so I'd say, okay, Arthur, you have my land. Go collect it from the land. What do you want from me? But we say that once there's a piece of land that can be considered mine, so the courts can say, it's as though we're collecting it. And Arthur gives over the loan to the courts, and the courts now are responsible to collect it from me. Practically, Arthur is going to collect it from me. But Arthur fills out a form, and you'll see towards the end of this year, towards Rosh Hashanah this year, you'll see they'll give out a bunch of forms. Everyone can write a prozibul. What they're writing is, we're giving the courts the ability to collect our loans for us. Now, what are we doing in effect? We're circumventing the biblical mitzvah of Shemitah. The Torah says, Shamot, if someone owes you money, let go. And Hillel said, yeah, but if we're going to leave things as they are, then no one's giving out loans. People need loans, and no one's giving loans because everyone's scared of losing their money. So Hillel instituted prozibul, which is a technical loophole, a way of getting around this mitzvah so that people won't stop giving loans. And this was an institution for the wealthy and for the poor. Bol are the wealthy, bully are the wealthy, buti are the poor. Pros is an institution, bully for the wealthy and buti for the poor. So Hillel made this institution to help everyone out. The wealthy will get their money back and the poor will be able to get loans. So that's an institution, that's a takana, that falls under this category, the fifth component of the oral law. We have other things that itkin Rabban Gamliel HaZaken. So these are examples of individual rabbis who made institutions. Rabban Gamliel HaZaken, the elder Rabban Gamliel, instituted things. Itkin Revi Ploni, or Itkin Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. We find Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai instituted many things. Valdeva Talmud, frequently in the Talmud, we find Itkin Revi Ploni, this rabbi instituted, Itkin Revi Ploni, or that rabbi instituted. Ve'eshmen takanot miyusot la'mon ha'chachamim. And sometimes we find institutions that are attributed to the conglomerate of the rabbis, Kmo Shambuz, our sages say, the Usha Itkinu, in the great assembly, in the great Talmudic academy of Usha, they instituted such and such. Of Moshe Amur, as our sages sometimes say, Tiknu Chachamim, the rabbis instituted, or Takanot Chachamim, or institutions of the rabbis. So the Rambam now is going to sum up. Imken. So now that we've discussed the five components of the oral law, Kol Adinim Nizkrim B'Mishnah Nechlakim Al Elu Hachamsha Chalakim. All the laws you'll find throughout the Mishnah can be broken down to these five components. Mehem, some of the laws, Perushim Kuvelim Mishiktim Moshe. B'Yeshna Lemes Bakatuv. Some of the laws in the Mishnah are things that we have on tradition for Moshe, which have an allusion in the verse. Or if Shaliot Sovrim Aleim Svara, or you can derive them logically. Umeim Alachan Moshe Sinai. Some of them are just on tradition. We have no no source in the verses. Umema shotu b'derech keshe svara. Uvon nafna machloket. Some of the things the rabbis derived from the inference of a hekesh or using logic, and that's where we find arguments. Umem gzerot. Some of them are what we just discussed, gzerot, defenses of the rabbis. Umehem takanot. Some of them are the institutions. So all of the oral law can be broken down to these five components.